Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. I'm Zach Moore, and in this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of Smallville, the Young Superman series that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. This episode, I'm joined again by my friend Nick Ryan Mendoza. What's up, Nick?
Not much. How's it going?
It's going, man. So, Drone is the episode we're talking about this week. Drone is has a special place. A lot of Smallville episodes have a special place in my heart, right? But yeah. This one actually, like, directly influenced me in high school, because this is the episode where Clark Kent runs for class president, right? With that in mind, I never ran for actual class president of my high school. But what I did do, and Nick, you'll remember this, because Nick and I go back. We go back.
Way back.
Well, I don't know if we actually said these specifics before, but we played French horn together in the band.
What up?
F horn in the house.
F horn?
We never said that.
I do remember coming up with like a weird hand thing to make it look like we're making an F with our fingers. Do you remember that?
No, I do not. And that's dangerous. But anyway, so this episode, Clark runs for class president. So my senior year of high school, I ran for band president. And much like Clark in this episode, I did not win. But seriously, out of all the things,
who did you run against again?
Look, we're not gonna go into it here.
Oh,
Nick,
cool.
But I'm
legitimately like I remember the band presidents, and I'm trying to remember which
all right,
one.
All right, it was Robbie Trevino.
Oh, that's right, Robbie.
So it's
right.
Like, are you kidding me? How did I lose? But you know, it's really. Well,
we can talk about it through the episode while we go through
it. We can work out our feelings there, right? But but this episode does. This is the one that really. I'm like, well, I could do this. You know, Clark ran for class president. Maybe I will too. And that's Smallville influencing my life in that way. But before we jump into that discussion, we do have some more emails from the listeners. So I want to read some listener feedback. Now I wonder if I should ever get like a catchy tune or maybe a sound bite to get us into.
We just got a letter. We just got. Wait, no, that's from something.
Is that from Blue's Clues?
Yeah, that was Blue's Clues.
All right. How do we both know that? All right, moving on. Wonder who it's from. if mail is ever discussed in Smallville, I will grab that sound clip and perhaps use it and have a dedicated listener feedback section. But as of now, I just kind of read them as we go. So, you know, our good friend Corey Moore, who has sent several emails in. Now, Nick, you and I did Kinetic together, that episode.
Mm-hmm.
So Corey took it upon himself to actually do a bro count. Okay.
Oh,
snap. So I know we were talking, like we were discussing in our discussion on that episode, Nick, like, man, you know, we really should have counted how many times the guy said bro. So Corey emailed us and he said, hey, I took one for the team and watched Kinetic. I counted 14 bros.
Oh man.
I thought there would be more than that, something like 25 or 30, but no, just 14. Very disappointing. Later, bro. Corey. So thanks, Corey.
Yeah, thank you. 14, but I think
it was the concentration of the bro.
Yeah. I think the word bro probably it's like exponential. Every single time you use it, it gets a little more we get it. We get it. We get it.
he had another email, actually, in response to our last episode on Reaper. Now, did you get a good chance to listen to our last episode, Nick?
I have not. I've been terribly busy. But
All right. There it is. So that's how it's going to be. That's how it's going
to
be.
Hey, I get around to it, though. You know I do.
See, folks, this is not scripted. We're having a... No, it's all good. So, no, Corey just had a couple of responses to that, so I'm going to read that real quick. He said, hi, Zach. Very enjoyable conversation on Reaper. You guys nailed it about the Freak of the Week. Take out the plot of the guy with the deadly touch, and the rest of the episode still would have been pretty good. Looking back on my records, I gave this episode a straight-up C. I love the father-son plots. And, you know, Lance and I both gave it C-pluses in our episode last time. And he goes on to say, this week my parents visited, so the father plot in this week's review is perfect timing. My dad is getting up there in age. Spending time with him is at a premium and something I look forward to very much. This episode really nails how some fathers and sons act in a daily household. As a kid, my dad would always want me to go to the hardware store with him. I'm thinking it was his way to spend some time one-on-one with me. He loves tools. Catch you next week, Corey. And that, you know, that's a reference to, you know, Jonathan really wanted to go fishing with Clark, but it really wasn't about the fishing. It was just about spending the quality time together. So thanks for that, Corey. Yeah, it's great. You know, and that's a great thing about Smallville is when it has these these little things. You know, it's not obviously none of us can relate to, oh yeah, man, I remember when I got sucked into Phantom Zone, you know. But it's like, yeah, I remember when I ran for class president, or, you know, my dad wanted to go fishing with me, little things like that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I think that's one of the reasons why everyone who's a fan of Smallville is because of how relatable it can be.
Then we got one more email we're going to read. It's from Sarah. Sarah Bateman emailed us in last episode. And she is still in high school right now, and she was expressing how she's a big, you know, Superman and Smallville fan, and how no one else knows about what Smallville is. And so Lance,
I'm so sorry.
Lance and I posed the question, like, okay, so Sarah, how did you even come across Smallville? I'm curious to know. So she wrote us back with a response. She said, hi, thanks for reading my email on the show. That was really cool. Well, here you go again, reading another email from you. So to answer your question about how I found the show, my parents showed me the show Lois and Clark when I was in elementary school, and I really enjoyed it. Okay, it's cheesy, but it's fun. After I had finished the show, I was in 6th or 7th grade, which was after Smallville had finished. However, my dad mentioned to me and my sisters that we would like the show. I have no idea how he knew about the show. I was a baby, my older sister was a toddler, and we hadn't adopted my younger sister yet when Smallville first aired, so I have no idea when my dad or mom had time to turn on the WB to catch an episode of Smallville, which is a valid point. I tend to gravitate towards older or somewhat unknown shows. Wings, anyone? Now, you watch Wings, Nick?
Wow, yeah, I've seen like a couple of those episodes. That's why I'm saying wow right now.
Yeah, that is interesting. And, you know, Superman trivia, Tim Daly, the voice of Superman in the DC anime universe, he was in Wings, so small world there. But I'm aware of Wings, but I never like watched it, you know. Anyway, she goes on to say, so my parents got season one on Smallville from the library, mm-hmm. and I've been hooked ever since. Tracking down all of the episodes was no easy task, but eventually we found them. So hey, there you go, guys. There's another avenue for you to watch the series.
The local libraries.
The local library.
Yeah, don't they check out iPads now too? So
they do? Are you serious?
Yeah, so some libraries do. I've seen them. They actually check out iPads, but I don't know if it's like check out to take home or more like check out to use at the library.
And I haven't been in a library since college. Half Price Books is my library. You know what I mean? Like, I'll permanently buy a book, but that.
Bedrock City Comics is my library.
There you go. She also, to close out her email, she says, I also want to share my opinions on Smallville ships, which is relationships. You have mentioned quite a few times that you are a Clark fan, C-H-L-A-R-K, being Chloe and Clark shipper. I was, too, in the first few seasons. I love Chloe. She's probably my favorite character on the show, but I'm glad her and Clark never had a long-term relationship. Because Clark needs to have Chloe as his best friend to help ground him and keep his human side. In the later seasons, it seems almost absurd to think of Chloe and Clark as a romantic couple because they do love each other, but in a much more brother-sister way. I was always a big fan of the Clois, that's C-L-O-I-S, relationship, because Lois and Clark had a lot of on-screen chemistry and did a good job balancing each other out, as did Chloe and Oliver. But those are just some of my opinions on the show. Thanks for reading, Sarah. So, Nick, who is your favorite Smallville ship?
Are we talking about right now or, like, when I watched the show?
Just overall.
Are you telling me
it's changed?
Well, watching the series right now, I've been shipping Clark. Like, you know, I'm not going to go and spell it because we're going to just be spelling words all day.
Chloe and Clark.
But when Lois was actually introduced, I actually started liking Lois. I really like the Clois, so... That's my take.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Do you agree about Chloe and Clark though? Are you glad they never got together in any way?
Yeah, I do. For some reason, I also thought that her review was gonna poke fun at Arrow as well, but
it didn't go there, did it?
It didn't go there, but I thought it could. I started thinking about it. It's like, what if Felicity and Ollie never really did, like, and they became like. I think it would have been a little bit better. I don't know.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I always was like, oh, man, Chloe and Clark, I mean, they would have been great together. And it feels like that would have been a more organic pairing. I feel like Lois and Clark was on Smallville was really, really forced a lot of the time. It's been in the early seasons. Now, I finally came around to it around season 8. After seeing what happened to Arrow after Felicity and Oliver got together, and I was like, you know what? I'm glad Chloe and Clark didn't get together. You know, that's what proved me. And much less they kill off Lois or Chloe. Well, for Clark to be with Lana, you know, that's the equivalent of what they've done here. So killing off the iconic love interest of the superhero in the show, so he can be with a character that the fans have willed into him being in a relationship with, you know, never good for business. So, and as the time of this recording, I've still not watched the rest of Arrow season 4.
I've been waiting for you to tell me that you were going to watch it. I might just wait till Netflix picks it up, so I don't actually, because I think now I'm to the point where Hulu doesn't even have the episodes I watch anymore.
I have them all. They're all on my DVR. I just, you know, hey man, I got life to live. I got small little podcasts to record. I'm a busy guy. So, and you know, I will say this, Rob Watkins, if you're out there listening, you comment on a lot of our Facebook, and I really appreciate the conversation, man. And I know we disagree on almost everything. It seems just like whenever I make a point, you have a disagreement. But I enjoy the conversation. I really do. I really appreciate it. And I know that you think we're too hard on Felicity, and maybe we are. But I just look, man. There's an A to B correlation. You cannot argue there's an A to B correlation where Arrow was really good, and now that Felicity has taken center stage, it's very not good, okay? And a lot of that has to do with the focus on Felicity and the Olicity ship, and I really feel that way.
The plot shifted a little bit to where it changed too much. It wasn't like a subtle change. It wasn't like they eased their way into it. It was more of like, okay, this isn't the show we had in the beginning. It was too much of a dynamics switch. Now, if they probably did a couple, like one more season of them, like working on a relationship, you had one episode where, like, you had the season finale, like, okay, let's get together, and then boom, they're together. They should have expanded it, but let's drop that because this is a completely different show.
Well, all I wanted to say was, look, Rob, I know you're out there, I know you're listening, I know you disagree, I know you probably get frustrated whenever you hear us talk about Oliver, Felicity, and Olicity, and Arrow, and all that. But, man, those are my opinions, man. So, but keep sharing yours on the Facebook page. I really appreciate the conversation, and I look forward to continue to disagree with you about this in the future. So thanks again to everybody who's emailed in, and we'll continue to until we come across some kind of soundbite from Smallville that I can transition this stuff into. We'll just kind of read them as they come, and I really appreciate all the feedback from you guys, so keep it up. That creates a community of conversation and involves everybody in the show. And I really enjoy it. And I'm glad that you guys out there are enjoying the podcast as well, because that's what it's all about. You know, like I said last week, Nick, you know, my whole angle with this is, you know, this is us sitting around the lunch table, you know, the next day after Smallville talking about the fresh episode, as you so often say.
yes. It was that, or in the morning in the band hall.
Yeah.
I was like, Did you guys watch it? Yeah. Oh, man. Good times.
Well, speaking of high school, let's jump into Drone. Now, you know, Miles Miller had this to say, the executive producer of Smallville. And now, as always, the majority of my behind-the-scenes clips comes from Smallville, the official companion, Season 1, by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. You know, that's what I always say.
I don't know if that's true.
eBay's really your best bet these days. But it's kind of a poorly received episode, and I have a feeling our ratings will reflect that. But this is Miles Miller's response to the general consensus that this was a poor episode. He said, "It's interesting, because we always find that the rabid fans hate the high school episodes, but the teen audience who watch the show love them. I'm actually a big fan of the teen shows, and I thought Drone was really successful. It's a really cool, interesting, inventive teen story." What do you think of that quote, Nick?
Okay. So,
not to get ahead of ourselves, but
not to get ahead of ourselves. You know what? I will leave it to the end, actually. I will, because
taking the fifth, no comment.
No comment just yet, because I feel like it will set the dynamic if I actually say what I think now, then later.
Well, then let's jump into it. Drone.
Clark Kent for president.
How'd you know I was running?
I found this on my windshield in town.
I have an overzealous campaign manager.
I didn't realize you had political aspirations.
I don't. I just figured I could make a difference.
You want some advice? I think you need a better slogan. Everybody's used this one, including me.
You ran for student office.
Once. My aspirations weren't very noble.
Did you win?
Of course.
Do you have any tips?
You don't need my method. You'll win on your own terms.
Competition's pretty stiff.
There's nothing wrong with a good fight. Just remember, the man of tomorrow is forged by his battles today.
Could I use that? I mean, the man of tomorrow for my slogan? Knock yourself out.
Drone is the 18th episode of Smallville's first season. It aired on April 30th, 2002. It was written by Michael Green and Philip Levins and directed by Michael Cattleman. Now, we start out with a shot of a CGI bee that we stay on for entirely too long. Would you agree with me, Nick?
Well, actually, I had no idea what this episode was about until I saw the bee. And I was like, I think this episode's about bees. Like, without even looking at the preview or anything, I was like, drones, bees, okay, this makes sense. Thanks for shoving it down my throat.
Right. I mean, we didn't need to see the bee flying around off the top. I mean, I don't know. They just wanted to let you know what to expect, right? We do get some nice new exterior shots of Smallville High School. I feel like they've been recycling that stock footage for way too long because we see that they're hanging a sign, and it's that the class elections, this week or something like that, right? And Chloe's going around taking pictures of, the candidates and whatnot, and I saw that she got a new camera finally. It's not that giant box camera anymore, is it, Nick?
Mm-mm. It's an impressive camera too. I was actually impressed with how it looked, and like it could twist and everything. So, we're getting the future here. And I forget this is the past.
the brave new world of 2002. We meet our three main candidates for class president here. The first is Paul.
Man, okay, so I was so excited that there was an Asian guy in this episode, and I was just like, yes, why people? Because there's this whole thing going on right now, like where there needs to be more Asian people on TV. And then I realized this is like one of those prime examples where, okay, he had a lot of screen time, but it's
well, no, he actually he didn't have a lot of screen time.
Well, hold on. He had a lot of screen time for an Asian person.
Wow. Well, and just, hey, for the record, by the way, you're Asian, just so the listeners know.
Oh, yes, please. At first, I thought that's why you asked me to do this episode. I was like, is this why he asked me to do this episode?
No, I really, to be honest, I really asked you to do this episode because of the whole band president thing. Because you have a unique opinion. But that's funny that your mind went there. So Simon Wong, the actor who played Paul ever so briefly, he was in The Incredible Hulk as a grad student. I don't know. He might have been one of the guys that was filming, when Hulk was on his rampage at the college campus. He was also in a TV show called Pure Pwnage. Seven episodes of that in 2010. He was a guest star on Transporter, the series. He was also in the new Twilight Zone in 2002 with Forest Whitaker. And that's pretty much it. I mean, he's had a few spots here and there, and he does have his last credited work was this year in a TV series called Raising Expectations. So looks like he's still in the industry, still getting some work. So good for you.
Yeah, good for him. Go Asians. Like, seriously, that's good, because you rarely see Asian people in TV business that sticks with it.
Hashtag starring John Cho, right, Nick?
Yeah, right. That's like, he's like, I just watched Now You See Me. You had Jay Chou, but he doesn't count because he's already a celebrity in China. So it's, they get either people who are already popular or they get him to guest star, but you never really see them reoccurring in any other shows. So props. Was this his kickoff? I should have looked him up. Was this the show he first started on?
No, he'd been in previous things as well.
Okay.
I thought you were going to ask me if this was his first appearance as the character. It's like, Nick, you know Smallville. These people. Oh, hey. hey, Paul. Yeah. You've been our friend for months. How's it going?
Well, the reason why I bring it up is because, not gonna lie, I thought about acting at one point in my life, and it's always one of those things. You look at TV, you don't see a lot of Asian actors, so you actually get kind of like downplayed on it. But now we got shows like Fresh Off the Boat and Master of None, where you have a lot of new culture being introduced. So good for Simon.
Now the next candidate we meet is Sasha Woodman. And she is also, I think she's ethnic, right, Nick? What was your take on her ethnicity?
I wasn't really too sure. I was more distracted with, like, her dishevelment.
Well,
like,
see, when you take, it's TV 101. You take a pretty girl, and you put her in some frumpy clothes and give her some kind of lazy hair and some glasses, and she's automatically, oh, this girl is ugly. We don't like her, right? That's what they're going for with her, right?
That's a thing. I didn't see her as ugly, and I felt what you were just explaining, but then there was just, I was like, there was mystery.
it's TV shorthand for this girl's not popular, right?
Right, right, right.
So Sasha here is played by an actress called Shonda Farr. She has a similarly sporadic IMDb. She was in an episode of Seventh Heaven, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, That 70s Show. She was in Jack Frost 2, Revenge of the Mutant Killer Snowman. Movie.
Okay.
Now that's a sequel to the non-Michael Keaton Jack Frost.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
So everybody, if you're not familiar with this, and this was a bigger deal when there was like video stores you'd go into and get tapes and stuff, but everybody knows the Jack Frost with Michael Keaton, and it's basically Ghost Dad, but with a snowman, right?
Right,
it's like a
right.
dad who dies somehow. Oh, kind of a dark beginning to a movie like that, right?
But, yeah, he dies. He's a trucker. Yeah.
And he comes back and he possesses a snowman. This was in Michael Keaton's dark time, like post-Batman Returns, pre-Birdman, you know, when he was just doing...
You mean that was like a really long time between you just gave... Because Birdman was like, what, a year, 2 years ago?
He was doing movies like White Noise, like 20 years ago. Herbie Fully Loaded, you know, all kinds of stuff. But anyway, Shonda Farr, right? So to get ahead of ourselves a bit, Sasha Woman actually appears again in Smallville in season 7. With the episode called Cure with Dean Cain. But she's not played by Shonda Farr. She's played by another actress called Giovanna Huguet. And I didn't really understand why, because Shonda Farr, it's not like she stopped acting. She was still acting in 2007. She was in an episode of House that year, actually. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So it's like this actress was available. You brought back the character. Why recast? If you can't in that episode, it didn't specifically need to be here. It could have been pretty much any previous Freak of the Week on Smallville, because the point of the episode was Dean Cain's character, Dr. Curtis Knox, aka Vandal Savage, but that's a conversation for another time. You know, he was curing quote unquote people with meteor powers. So they just wanted to show, hey, look, here's an established character who got cured. Now, I understand it was like 6 years later and maybe nobody really paid attention. I believe even watching it live, I was like, is that the same actress? I don't really know, because she wasn't all frumped up and stuff. But they recast her. It's like, look, if you can't get the same actress, why even bother to bring back the character? Just use a different – I'm sure somebody on the Rolodex they could have gotten back.
Okay, guys, a Rolodex is where we used to keep phone numbers. Like, you would spin it around, just for those who didn't know what that is.
Isn't there an app called Rolodex? I don't know.
I don't think so, because it's just called contacts.
Man, you millennials, right? Anyway, we made our third candidate, Felice, and she is basically straight off the set of Clueless, okay?
Yes, yes. Mean Girls, if you guys know what Mean Girls
are. There you go, Mean Girls. Why do you have to keep updating my reference?
No, I'm just making sure... I don't want us to be dating things, because now I just found out we have high schoolers who watch this.
So that's right. Now, she's played by Shalon Simmons. Looking at her IMDb, it's a bit longer than our other two candidates for Smallville Class President, and they include episodes of shows like Special Unit 2. You remember that show? It was a short-lived show on UPN, but anyway, okay. Special Unit 2, Supernatural, Stargate Atlantis... Psych.
Oh, these are good shows.
Kyle XY.
Oh, Kyle XY. Yeah. You remember he was on Disney. He was like a robot or something, and he didn't have a belly button or something. That was the thing of the show. He had no belly button. He had to keep wearing a shirt or else people would find out.
What a great hook. Grey's Anatomy. Okay. So she's been all kinds of stuff.
All right. All I could say is because she's not Asian. She got all these. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey man, I mean, you got a valid point there. I'm not going to argue with you. Now, Shalon Simmons would return to Smallville in season 4 as a different character, Rhonda the cheerleader, in season 4's Devoted, which is the episode with the Kryptonite Gatorade. Yes, that's a thing. So, you know, interesting that she would come back as a different character. That they could have just made her the same character. That would have been cool. I mean, it literally didn't matter at all continuity-wise, so why not? Why not add some continuity of this cast? But anyway, spent a lot of time on that, but those are our three candidates at present for Smallville Class President. So there you go. Well, Sasha's going around and, like, you know, you can tell that she really, really wants to be class president. And
you can really tell that she's going to be the freak of the week.
Yeah, you can really tell that, too, because these other people are way too normal.
Well, one of the things I do remember Pete saying is, like, Sasha, she's more of a worker, not a leader. And I was like a worker bee?
Exactly.
Oh, okay, I see what they're doing.
But she's the queen bee, so that doesn't really make sense, does it?
See, that's the thing. We didn't know she was the queen bee yet. So
I don't know what they were trying to say with that, but they were trying to say something. So we cut to later that night. It's at Paul's house, and he's printing out this poster, and it's him basically in a Superman costume. I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, how is this a thing? Like,
they predicted this year's new Rebirth comics with the Chinese Superman. So.
well, here's the deal. It's not, and this is a lot of, I know this created a lot of conversation online back in the day, and it's not a Superman costume. If you look at the Smallville Crow's mascot, like there's like a decal of it on the door of the torch. It's a crow, right? But he's wearing the Smallville S on his chest and a red cape behind him, okay? So what Paul has done is he has just put his face on top of these Smallville... It's like if you or I put our face on top of the Dulles Viking, right?
Oh, okay.
This is Paul putting his face on top of the... hey, guys, this is where we went to high school, so do your internet research and figure out who we are.
Oh, man, you might as well tell it John Foster Dulles. Yeah. There you go.
It's the only high school named after Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles. We're not even through the cold open here. We got to move things along. So Paul's very pleased about his poster, and he sees a bee, like, in his mirror, like, stings him, and then he's trying to get the stinger out of his hand. And while he's doing that, he hears a noise, you know, and he looks down into his sink, and then he – and some really some unnecessary CGI water drops – I thought, but then we get this swarm of bees explode through his sink and attack him, and it was like, whoa, this is pretty intense.
That was
like,
hardcore.
I'm sure, yeah. I've seen this scene like the X-Files or Fringe or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, Nick, that's all we see from Paul. So
that's all.
I hope Simon Wong got a good day's pay for his work in this episode. But so he's done.
That looks like one day work of play. Like, maybe.
I mean,
that's probably just one day work.
Two scenes, you know.
One scene more than most Asian actors.
Hey, hashtag truth, Nick. Hey, man, go ahead, preach it, brother. It needs to be said. So we go to the opening credits. We come back, and you know, Chloe and Clark and Pete are talking about, you know, everything that happened. Like, oh wow, that's weird. A freak accident, a swarm of bees. You know, I mean, who would suspect foul play in that situation, right? I mean, yes, it's a little odd, but this is Smallville. Nothing weird ever happens in Smallville. So they turn a corner and they discover that Pete has nominated Clark for class president.
Man, the bromance between Pete, like, Pete was like, man, he's the whole package. You got the looks, you got the razor. So I'm like, man, Pete, lay off a little bit.
Right. Well, and then Pete, he really starts talking up. He's like, well, they say, well, Pete, why don't you run for class president? He's like, no. I'm more the power behind the throne, right? I'm the man behind the man. And then what that is a reference to, in the comic books at the time, Lex Luthor was president of the United States. And who was his vice president? Pete Ross. So that's what that was a reference to. Okay, they turn a corner. There's a banner that says, you know, Clark Kent for president, right? And, you know, there's maybe like 15 or so people just hanging out in the hallway. And Pete just starts going, Clark, Clark, Clark. And then they all start chanting around like, Clark, Clark, Clark.
Hey, man, I would instill like, oh, I could probably do that. Like if everybody started cheering my name, it's like, okay, I'll try it out.
And you know, he turns to Chloe. He's like, hey, Chloe, not that I'm actually considering running, but if I did, you think I have a shot? And she's like, sure you do, Clark. Just as soon as I get to be head of the cheerleading squad, she kind of walks off. I'm like, wow, way to not be encouraging to your friend. But so then we, as I've often found in these episodes, they keep having trouble organically transitioning into Lex's plot when it's not the main plot. So, you know, we get Lex recklessly driving down the road, by the way. Clearly he's learned nothing from the pilot. And, you know, he's driving by and he sees a young woman in a nice car and in a nice dress.
As soon as I saw that, I was thinking about Mad Max and the quote, like, that's bait.
Yeah.
That's bait.
So obviously this woman's having car trouble, or so we'd like to believe. Catches Lex's attention. He stops. He backs up. He calls his mechanic. And she starts, you know, asking him some questions. And he's like, oh, all these questions. It's beginning to sound like an interview. He quickly snuffs her out as a reporter. He's like, you know, who are you? Who do you work for? And her name's Carrie Castle from the Metropolis Journal. Now, how many newspapers do you think Metropolis has, Nick? Because here at Houston, we're the fourth largest city in the country. We currently have one major metropolitan newspaper. We used to have the Houston Post, but they closed that when we were
Yeah, I was like, what about Houston Post?
That was like early 1990s. That was like 25 years ago, all right, when we had two. So we just have the Houston Chronicle. Now, I understand, and New York has like all kinds of papers, and I'm, you know, in the DC universe, Metropolis is the New York, but not in the Smallville universe. I mean, it's apparently Kansas City. So we have the Metropolis Inquisitor. We know that Roger Nixon works there. We have the Metropolis Journal now that Carrie Castle works for. We have the Daily Planet. I mean, I guess that's fair to have three, right? Because the Inquisitor isn't taken very seriously. So if the Daily Planet was the New York Times, Mm-hmm. Metropolis Journal is the Wall Street Journal, and I guess the Inquisitor is the New York Post, right? Because isn't that like the trashy one? <You know? laughs> Like the tabloidish one? I don't really call it. My apologies to any New York listeners if you know what they're talking about.
I tell you, I love the dialogue like with Lex, with Mike Rosenbaum. It's like, so many good quotable stuff.
He can turn any scene into something that's enjoyable. But real quick, let's talk about the actress here. Her name is Marguerite Moreau. Did you recognize her at all?
I recognize her, but I don't remember where she's from. I the whole time I was watching, it's like, I know her for something. And I feel like I know her for something recent.
If I started chanting, ducks, 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 oh! ducks, ducks.
Yes.
It's Connie from the Mighty Ducks. Yeah.
I had a crush on her watching that movie, man.
So yes, she is probably most famous to people of our age for being in the Mighty Ducks movie. She was also in a couple episodes of The Secret Life of Alex Mack, which is another, not Allison Mack, Alex Mack, which is a show on Nickelodeon back in the day. She was in Free Willy 2, The Adventure Home. She was in a couple episodes of Boy Meets World. Now, that's all when she's, you know, younger and a kid.
Right.
She was also in some episodes of The O.C., and then what about Brian? You were aware of that show?
Oh, Nick? Yes. I am aware of that show. Maybe that's where I recognize her from.
What About Brian is a really fun show. I really enjoyed it. It only lasted a couple seasons.
I couldn't get through like the first three or four episodes. It was a little bit too dumb funny for me.
Well, to each their own. It had lots of familiar faces in that series. So mm-hmm. Short-lived show, but it was fun. More recently, she's been in Parenthood, Shameless, Grey's Anatomy, Wet Hot American Summer. So
that's what it is. Wet Hot American Summer. Okay. I watched that movie recently on Netflix.
So she's a very familiar face, and she was a great guest star, even though, and I will say this now, this is the most disconnected Lex plot from any episode. Like, seriously, we have this A plot going on over here, this B plot going on over here, and they never meet.
I actually had no idea why this plot was even here, to be honest.
Like, it would have been good in another episode, like, because it's mm-hmm. so disconnected, you can easily just insert it into some other episode. Okay, Lex needs something to do, let's give him this to do. And that's exactly what this was. Like, okay, well, we got this high school election thing going on, but Lex needs something to do, so yeah, why don't we do this reporter thing? Now, I will say this. I feel like this would have been a really cool – not obviously the way this character goes, this wouldn't work out. But I feel like this kind of approach would have been a really cool way to introduce Lois Lane onto the show down the road instead of the crankly lame way she was introduced in season 4. We don't need to go into it now, but imagine that Lex Luthor was a similar situation like this, right? Mm-hmm. And Lois Lane is trying to nab an interview with Lex Luthor for the Daily Planet, right? And that's how that's how Lois is introduced in the Smallville world through Luthor, who has Metropolis connections, right?
Right.
Not through Clark being Chloe's cousin, you know, but just like a third party. She's part of that Metropolis world, and so is Lex Luthor. Seeing this kind of go down the way it did in this episode, obviously they would have gone in a completely different direction with it. They went with this Carrie Castle character. But I like thought to myself, man, that, you know, down the road, season 4, season 5, when and if it was appropriate to introduce Lois Lane, that would have been a cool way to do it.
Yeah, I highly agree with that.
So Lex kind of dismisses her. She wants to do an interview with him. He dismisses her. And he says, you get points for style, though. So, and I think we can all agree on that one. So we cut back to Smallville High School, and Sasha has gotten wind that Clark is running for president. And he gets discouragement from her. He gets discouragement from Chloe. Pete's the only guy really excited about it, and it was his idea in the first place. And then when he goes home, his parents are actually very encouraging as well. But I love their points here, his parents, because they say it's something that doesn't require you to use your powers. Because Clark is immediately like, oh, I thought you guys wouldn't be for this because it's such a public thing. So Clark, even after talking to his parents, like his parents seem to have like pep talked him up enough, you know? But even then, he's still like not feeling it. So he shows up at the talent to talk to Lana, and who better to encourage him to run for class president?
It's funny because like at that scene, I realized like, man, Lana really has him wrapped around her finger.
Yeah, he's totally not going to do it until she's like, I think you make a great class president, Clark. That's the only reason he does it. But look, we can all relate to that, right? To impress girls you like or whatever, right? People do stupid stuff. And I mean, not to say this is stupid, but look, Clark was clearly not going to do this. And then when Lana said, I think you should do it, Clark, he's like, oh, sure, I'm all aboard. So he goes 110% into it.
And I liked it because Lana said, like, you have an innate sense of justice. I was like, oh, I see what you guys are. I see you writers.
But that's actually fine. That's not like
I know. I like it. It's subtle. That was one that I liked.
It's not like, are you made of steel or aren't you? Like, who says that, right? But But you can say, you know, yeah, you have an innate sense of justice. I see it on your face when how you feel when it looks like you feel like someone's been done wrong. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. Right. Superman is that way. I really like that. So she really has a good understanding of Clark. You know, they have a solid relationship. As weird as it was for them to, you know, be friends in the first place, right? The circumstances that brought them together and forged their friendship, they really do care about each other and have a good understanding of each other.
Right.
And, you know, so Lana also has a subplot in this episode, right? And it's the beanery has been trying to put them out of business because the town is real empty.
The beanery?
I don't know.
Oh, that's how they connect.
Maybe the plots do tie together. No. I remember this plot line happening. Like, I remember, because, you know, the beanery was a thing and then the town became a thing. And then there was, I remember this episode where, like, Lana was fighting the beanery some, you know, behind the scenes and it was resolved. And then we never heard about the beanery again. You know, but I didn't know which episode it was, and now I know, right? Now I remembered. Is there not room for two coffee shops in a small town? Perhaps not. But moving on from that. So Clark's going from place to place, and you know, and I totally buy it. Usually I'm like, why is this character come here? Why is his purpose here? Well, you know, this is so contrived. But no, it makes sense he would go to all his friends and family, the people whose opinion he values most, talk to him about this before, you know, making his decision, right? So next he goes to Lex, and I love the scene, as you were saying, Nick. You know, Michael Rosenbaum is Lex Luthor. He can say anything, and it's great, right? So he says, Clark Kent for president, and he holds up this flyer. Right? And he's like, where did you get that? He's like, found it on my windshield in town. And Clark says, I have an overzealous campaign manager. So Lex actually tells him a story about how he ran for class president. Now, Nick, did you catch the slogan here that Lex had that he gave to Clark?
Yes, man of tomorrow.
Yes, Lex tells him, remember, the man of tomorrow is forged by his battles today. Do you know why that's important in the comic books?
Why is it important in the comic books?
Well, that is one of Superman's other names, right? I mean, he's Superman, the Man of Steel, the last son of Krypton, the man of tomorrow. Have you ever heard of that before?
I actually haven't heard of Man of Tomorrow. I was thinking that they misspelled Steel and they just put tomorrow.
They misspelled Steel and they got tomorrow. No, I know what you're saying. It was actually a short-lived comic book called Superman the Man of Tomorrow. That's one of his other monikers, if you will, his pseudonyms. You know, like Batman has the Dark Knight, the Caped Crusader. And I really like the Man of Tomorrow, and I feel like it's underused. And this conversation, you know, Exhibit A, right? No one really knows. That's one of his subtitles. I don't know why. I actually like Man of Tomorrow more than Man of Steel because Metropolis is the city of tomorrow. So Superman would be the Man of Tomorrow because he's like their mascot, you know. But I like it, and it makes sense in a conversational aspect. You know, Lex's quote, you know, the Man of Tomorrow is forged by his battles today. That actually makes sense. It's a very Lex Luthor thing to say. And Clark would hook onto that first half and use it as his slogan because he doesn't have a good, you know, his flyers say Clark Kent for president. You know, and Lex is like, look, everybody's used that one. You need a catchphrase. And speaking of slogans for elections, when I was running for band president, my slogan was Vote More in 2004. More being my last name, 2004 being the year the election was taking place. So, you know, works on those two levels. And, you know, vote more, vote for me. And, you know, vote more as in vote more, although you should only vote once. But anyway, it was pretty effective, I thought. Well, not as effective because I didn't win. But you know, I like the alliteration of the rhyming, I should say, of more in 2004. And I realized I really can't run for anything else and use that slogan again until 2024, because, you know, 2014 doesn't really fit. So, you know, four rhymes with more. So if I want to keep that theme going, I won't run for anything until 2024. So now Clark has gone all in now. He's at school. He's like shaking hands. He's signing people up for meet and greets. And Chloe comes up to Clark and confronts him about this because she's understood it. Pete put Clark up to this, but he was just going to drop out. She says, I need to know where you stand on the issues. And Clark says, I stand for truth, justice, and other stuff. That is one of my favorite quotes of the series, to be honest, because it shows that he's still figuring stuff out, right? He's not Superman right. yet, and it's a very subversive way of the famous, he stands for truth, justice, and the American way. So I really like that.
Because the other stuff hasn't come in yet. That's great.
Then Pete shows up, and he's literally wearing, I counted, 8 Clark Kent for president buttons on his shirt. And if you notice, his wardrobe gets more and more ridiculous campaign manager as the episode continues. And, you know, this is one of the only references Smallville ever has to band. Because he says, there's a band concert on Friday. I know they suck.
Okay, I'm happy you caught that too. Because, like, what? The band sucks? What? What?
But he goes on to say, but you've got to be seen as a friend to the arts. So Thank you for finally a Band shout out. Now I'm shocked there was never a character in Band on this show. Like, literally,
I'm actually shocked we didn't have a Freak of the Week from Band.
I mean, yeah, you could have had like an acoustic guy. You know, I don't know. You could have done something crazy like that, right? With sound and
sound.
They had characters like that later, but I mean, they could have incorporated. You know, it would have been. He got trapped in his car with his tuba, so now he emits a low frequency rumble. You know, what a failed musician, Freak of the Week, whatever, right? We cut back to Sasha, and she's going home, I guess, and apparently she lives in a shed.
That's what I was thinking. It's like, is that her room? Does she hang out in there? I know she has parents because she keeps talking about him, but once again, parents don't exist in this town unless your name is Jonathan or Martha. So even when you see Nell, that's like not really a parent, and you only see her like for a split second.
Well, she has this campaign headquarters banner on the outside of her shed. And it's like, it's so sad, right? Because you know that she probably spent a lot of time on that and she's so proud of it. But it's like, nobody cares, Sasha. And, you know, we have the big reveal. She controls the bees because she's in her shed and the bees.
She's in her hive.
Yeah, her hive. There you go, her hive.
One of the windows was hexagonal. So I was like, oh,
there you go.
See what you're doing.
Good set design there. Way to go, Smallville. So the bees come in and they make this face, right? And this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And they copy her face, and it's like, what is this?
They're just smiling to each other.
Yeah, but they wouldn't operate this way. It doesn't make any sense. And you know, this is a gag. And I call it a gag. I don't even know how you describe this garbage. But they repeat it. They repeat it again on Arrow with the bug-eyed bandit, and they do the whole like her bees are electronic, right?
Electronic, yes.
So that actually makes more sense, to be honest, than the organic bees.
I'm happy you brought that up because I did write that down. It's like, oh my gosh, this is the Arrow episode. I was like, did they literally just take the exact same idea from this one and put it like?
Nobody probably remembers a small episode, right? We can use this, but yeah, that's a very odd thing for the like. I don't know why they even put that in there. Like, we get that she controls the bees. They don't even make a freaking smiley face at her. So as Clark is getting more and more involved in his campaign, he gets started caught up in everything, and he's talking to Chloe about it, and she says one day to be compromised by the laurels of popularity, and you know, it's a fun back and forth, and of course, you know, it's fun, but she's not supporting him really, and he says, remind me to cut your funding when I'm elected. it's just a nice moment between the two of them here.
Yes, yeah, I love the dialogue, but. We continue on, right? And she starts talking about the bees, and Clark actually knows a lot about bees, apparently, because of Discovery Channel.
Yeah, that's a cute moment. He would watch a lot of Discovery Channel. I mean, hey, I did too. I thought that stuff's interesting. Because she's doing research about where these bees come from, and basically like lots of bee farms throughout the state are emptying it out, and they're all disappearing. And so they're like, where are these bees going, right? But then the end of this conversation, this friendly back and forth you've been enjoying between the two of them takes a turn, because he goes to read her first draft of her
editorial
on who she's endorsing for class president. Chloe endorses Paul, and this really upsets Clark. He's like, but you know, Clark's been a little whiny here. I really disagree with his opinion.
I was curious, like, did this seem out of his character to be whiny about this? Because like, we talk about that he's always been truthful and, like, fair, and then all of a sudden now he's like, yo, you're not endorsing me? And then he basically kind of throws a little temper tantrum and, like, leaves.
I feel bad for Chloe because, I mean, yeah, she says, look, I'm supposed to be impartial, and Paul's still the most qualified candidate, and he has stances on issues you've yet to articulate. Although, really, how many crucial, like, stances are there to have it for class president, right? I don't know, but I know running for band president is something a little different. And hey, you know, so do you remember what we're gonna jump into this now, right? A little bit more about me. So what I did was I practiced like a speech to what I would tell everybody. I went to every band and like gave a speech. You remember when I did this when I was running for class president?
I do remember.
So how did I do?
You did really well. I'm sorry, Robbie, but I did vote for Zach.
You better have voted for me. What the hell, man?
No. I actually believed in your platform. And Robbie, you're a great guy. You were really fun to hang out with, but I voted for Zach.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate your vote. But as for the speech here that I gave, That was intimidating because you got to, you know, okay, imagine this, kids. If you've ever been in a van hall, right, or you've seen a van perform, right? So the conductor stands on this podium in front of everybody. When it was my turn, like I literally, because we had four band periods in high school, like four levels of band. So I went to all these bands. I stood on the podium where the conductor was standing. And I don't know. It was probably about a 15-minute talk. I don't know. Maybe it was less than
probably
that.
Probably less than that.
It felt like forever.
It feels like forever whenever
you're up there talking. You know, I practiced it. I actually recorded it on cassette tape back in the day. When I was practicing,
those cassette tapes are the things that actually have like tape in it.
Look, cassette tapes are the things Chloe was using to interview the kids a few episodes ago about Clark and Zero. Okay, that's right. What a cassette tape
is.
Oh,
right. Okay, there you go.
And yeah, I mean, I still have it somewhere, and I'll find it one day. And I actually have the poster, some posters and pictures of this stuff. I don't know where this stuff is. I did not have time to find it and post pictures of it during the podcast, but at some point. Before this podcast is concluded, I will find, you know, either a flyer or a picture or a poster I have from this, because it's all, you know, back at home in the garage somewhere in a box. Didn't have time to pull it out and get it online in time of the podcast, but at some point, I'll post it on Throwback Thursday or something. But, you know, you helped me paint my poster, I believe, right, Nick?
Oh, yeah, it was after class.
Yeah, yeah, more for president, yeah, and the S was the Superman S, because everybody knew I was a Superman fan, you know, that was my thing. And only a select few people knew that, like, this Smallville episode was my inspiration.
I didn't know. I actually didn't know. And I find it actually pretty cool that's the reason. Maybe if you actually said that and told people then, you probably wouldn't have gotten the vote, because it's like, well, he's only running because of the fact that he saw it on a TV show. But
exactly, and yeah, that's why Clark didn't tell people the only reason he was running was because of Lana. Okay, so it's all about, you know, it's all politics, man.
It's all politics, man.
But yeah. But no, look, that gave me the inspiration to do it, but I took it very seriously. Okay, most of my friends were older. Here's where I lost, guys. Most of my friends were older, and when you're a senior, you can't vote because it's like, you know, it doesn't affect you, right?
Right.
Had the seniors been able to vote, I totally would have won. Yeah, I lost, but not much like Clark. But look, I enjoyed it. I have no regrets, right? It was fun, okay? And really, and this is a life lesson you can all take from Smallville and from me out there. If there's something that, when you have an opportunity to at least put yourself out there and do it, and you're on the, you do so, go for it, something like that, right? And because whenever you throw yourself, you literally, when you enter an election like this, you're throwing yourself to the mercy of public opinion, right? And that's a scary thing, because, you know, as you know, people just in everyday life are afraid, like, oh man, what if these people don't like me? When you literally have people voting for you or someone else, and it's like very clear if they like this other person more than you, and that is why they've cast a vote, you know, that's you can't get more black and white than that, right? Those are hard numbers, but. Yeah. As I understand it, it was pretty close. That's what I was told. So I don't know if they just told me that to make me feel better, but I really did enjoy running for class president. So that's why this episode, I'm like, you know, even though it's not that good, it does hold a special place for me. Moving on, Pete, who is now wearing a Clark Kent for President T-shirt, by the way, has taken Clark to the Talon, and it's still pretty empty. And this is Whitney gets another one of these, hey, I'm in this episode, but it just is a background extra. This has happened to him at least two other times. Eric Johnson is in the episode, but just kind of in the background. He doesn't really have anything to say or do. But he's there, like, you know, with his football buddies or whatever, just occupying space in the Talon to help Lana out. So Lana offers to help Clark with his speech. He's like, oh, why don't you come by the Talon later and help help.
And he's like, yeah, I will.
yeah, heck yeah. I need some help with my speech.
You're inviting me over instead of the other way around? That's a first.
But then they start talking about, hey, what's up with the Talon, you know? It's good to see some people here. And Alana's like, well, they're only here because Whitney asked them to be here. So apparently the owner of the Beanery has like made it their mission to put the Talon out of business, which is pretty extreme, I think. Like, why all this hateful, this hateful attitudes towards your fellow coffee shop?
Think of this, though. If you were the owner of the Beanery and one of your ex-employees decides to open up a brand new coffee shop right across the street or right next door, I would have a vendetta as well. It's like, you think you're better than me?
You know, that's a good point. I think a lot of people forget that Lana worked at the Beanery for an episode and she did a terrible job and they fired her. Like, did they not have, like, a no-compete clause when she got fired? Like, okay, you cannot start another coffee shop within 6 months from now, you know?
I don't think so, but, yeah, I was impressed.
That's a good point, Nick. But, so, the beanery manager basically tells Lana, it's nothing personal, it's just business. And she says to Clark, why does everyone over 40 quote The Godfather? Or Clark says to her, one of the two, right? Basically, they're sick of people quoting The Godfather, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Lex stops by to kind of check in, and then he quotes The Godfather. He says, quote The Godfather, it's time to go to the mattresses. I'm like, okay, that just like ruined the joke, because Lex isn't over 40. Lex is like 22 years old. You know what I mean?
Okay, did they like have a remastered version of The Godfather all of a sudden out like during this time?
Well, dude, I feel like these writers just were really big Godfather fans, because there's several Godfather references in this episode. It's like, okay, we get
like
it.
The whole episode, I was actually kind of tired of it by toward the end, but we'll get there.
yeah. But you're absolutely right. I feel like, okay, guys, we get it. You like The Godfather. So Sasha confronts Feliz. Feliz Navidad. So she basically, look, she's trying to talk her into dropping out of the election, and she refuses to do it. And then she gets in her car. She's like, you're a freak. And she gets in her car and starts driving off. And Sasha says, okay, well, don't say I didn't ask nicely. And Feliz, I'm going to call her Feliz Navidad.
I was going to say,
exactly. Feliz starts driving off. Hey, speaking of Asian representation.
Exactly.
Principal Kwan in the house, right? Hey, he gets another appearance.
I'm happy that, see, he's a reoccurring character. So good for him. But we still see him. He's still successful, because I still see him in shows to this day. So good for him.
So he's behind Feliz in the parking lot, and her car has stopped. He's like honking his horn.
There was music playing in the background. I wasn't sure if he was listening to it, because it was like muffled out.
I think it was coming from her car. It was like really loud music, is what I assumed. And so he gets out of the car, and I like how he apparently knows whose car it is, because he's like, Miss So and So. You know, like he knows whose car it is. He opens the door, and Felice falls out of the car, and it's a really good special effect, because she falls out of the car and she's covered in bees.
Okay.
Her face, her hands, everything. It's disgusting.
Are you sure it was special effect? Because I was actually surprised too how well it looked, like well done it was. And I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if they actually had bees like covered in something and it fell out.
Well, yeah, you know, I thought it might have been a mannequin or something, but here's what the Smallville official companion has to say. Believe it or not, that was real. It was the beekeeper. I don't think anyone else was stupid enough to do it. We found a whole pile of bees, and the beekeeper put all of these bees around his face inside the car. He had to open the door and fall out. He ended up getting stung about 25 to 30 times.
I was going
to
say, if you agitate him by falling. Yeah,
I know, right? That day was just insane, but it looked better than it ever would have looked if we had done it with computer imagery. Well, that is for sure, because the CGI bees in this episode continue to disappoint. But anyway, yeah, so that was the beekeeper there. And they were covered in bees. So that's a really creepy, effective moment, I thought, seeing her fall out of the car. So two down, one to go, basically, because Paul is out, Felice is out. Now Clark Kent's the only one left to stand in Sasha's way of becoming class president. We cut back to Lex's plot, and he's getting a massage, right? Carrie Castle has posed as his masseuse, which is a very, very lowest lane thing to do, though. You know, that's what I'm saying here, but go ahead.
There's so many innuendos that I wasn't sure if it was actual dialogue, or if they were actually talking about something, or they were talking about something else. I don't know whether it'd be uncomfortable, or am I just thinking outside of the box, but as you said, there is no reason for this plot line whatsoever.
Yeah, no, it's in and of itself, it's fine, but it doesn't fit into this episode at all. They make no attempt to tie it into the greater episode, so that's why it just feels so out of place, and it's like, by the way, here's what Lex Luthor's doing today, by the way. So he's getting this massage, and obviously it's revealed that it's Carrie here. They have a little back and forth, and, you know, she says, you did say you admired persistence. And he's like, oh, that's true. So she's like, okay. So she grabs her tape recorder. She's all excited to get the interview. And Lex says, not so fast, Miss Castle. I paid for 1 hour.
Oh, man, Mike Rosenbaum, man.
He's still going to make her give him a full hour massage.
And she still does it. That's like, the greatest part.
Yeah. But basically, you know, when the massage is over, I'm not sure where the innuendo is going to lead them. But all that aside, at the very least, an interview is going to take place, and she's going to get to write her article about Lex Luthor. Now, we go back to Smallville High School, and Clark, Chloe, and Pete are talking about the accident with Felice being stung by bees, and apparently she got stung a lot worse, and now she's in a coma.
She looked like she died.
Yeah.
Like, with that many bees covering you, I would be like, nope.
Yeah, she's in a permanent coma. It's called death. So they're theorizing about and you know, Chloe and Clark are still kind of on the outs right here, and Pete's, you know, they're both kind of like, gosh, Chloe, I can't believe you endorsed Paul, man. But they do at least theorize some about what's going on with all these bees, and they're like, well, you remember Sasha's accident last year? She was stung by that whole hive of bees, and they're like, oh, that might be it. I'm like, really? That's gonna be our explanation? Like, okay. And it's not even a thing that she controlled since childhood. It's something she got recently.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's funny because it's like, that should have just been a red flag. Oh, yeah. One of the other running mates had been stung by bees and miraculously lived in a kryptonite crater.
Well, you can't hold it against them for just jumping to that conclusion. Like, oh, when only one person is attacked, right? They're like, okay, that's a fluke accident. But with the two, it's now extremely suspicious, now, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Sasha goes and confronts Clark about this because it's just the two of them, right? And Sasha wants him to drop out of the race so she can win. And she says, look, my parents are riding me on this. They say I won't get into a good college if I lose. It's like, what? How old are these kids? I mean, I don't think if you don't win your freshman year of high school to be class president, that's going to hurt your chances in college, right? You have two more years to figure all that stuff out. Mm-hmm. So I think she's a little too much on edge about this.
Well, she's just a small town girl.
Living in a lonely world. So,
you know, I don't know. Maybe you might need more merits when you come out from a smaller town.
Look, so. You're in ninth grade, girl. You got time. So it's become evident, much like earlier with Felice, she, you know, tried to talk her to drop out, and that didn't work. So she attacked her with bees. Now it's become clear now. Clark's not going to drop out, so she's going to attack him with bees. So Clark and Lana are working on that speech at the Talon, as promised, and she's lamenting that the Talon's not doing well and how she, you know, the coffee shop was just the beginning. She wanted to restore the old theater and show old movies, and Clark says, like The Godfather, which is like, well, it's a funny in-joke to their conversation earlier, and I like that, but once again, why is this a thing now? Why is The Godfather a thing in this episode? I don't understand. But at least with them, it's like in their conversation, right? It's a through line with them. When it comes up again later in a different context with two other characters, it's like, whoa, where did that come from? Like, that's completely the writer and not the organic nature of the episode. So, you know, I do like this scene between Clark and Lana, but it's interrupted by a bee attack. The bees have come to get Clark. So he stashes Lana in the phone booth, which apparently the Talon has, which is a nice little Superman reference in and of itself to keep her safe. And then he runs to the back room. And of course, he's counting on the bees being focused on him because he's Sasha's next target. And they follow him in this back room, and he closes the door and then, I guess, pulls what? Like an AC tube off the wall?
Okay, so first off, I was really impressed that we finally actually got some little bit of Superman action. Like, okay, he uses his... X-ray vision. Okay, cool. That's cool. And then he uses super speed to get in the room. And when he got in the room, I was like, so what's next? What can he do?
He doesn't have heat vision yet. He doesn't have super breath. What can he do here?
Yeah, I was like, is he just going to eat them all and swallow them? Or is he going to squish them really fast with his hands? Like, I don't know. Actually, when he grabbed it, I had no idea what was going out of there. I was like, is that hot steam? Or... because I don't know what that was. I guess it was like a...
well, if it was hot steam, it would have...
it would have, like melted or something like that. But it was definitely something freezing. But that room, why would that pipe be there?
Right. I guess it's the same stuff that comes out of a fire extinguisher? Is that it? I mean, I don't know.
No, they froze. Because what happened was, like, they were making the tinking noises. And then after it was done... it breaks off of his own hand. Like, the frost comes off of his hand.
Right. That's true.
I was just like, oh. And he also ruined the room at the same time.
Right. So it was a cool visual. You know, I did like, you know, the freezing of the bees and all the bees and the whole room being covered in ice. And that was really cool. But that's going to be difficult to explain away, Clark. Like, what did he do? Like
well, that's
put the pipe back together?
Well, no. So we go to the next scene, and he's on the porch, and they're talking about, like, oh, no, the insurance bill is going to be killer. And I'm like, of course, because the insurance bill is going to be like, okay, dead bees and frozen bees. And what did Clark tell Lana? Like, what happened? What situation can you explain to make this believable at all? Like, so I put you in that room. I ran into the other room. The pipe miraculously broke, and it froze everything inside, even though it was a directional freeze. I'm sorry, writers. I want to defend you so badly, but there is, like, no way for me to come up with something plausible. Like, that was my plausible thing, was like, make up a fact that the pipe broke and everything in the room got frozen.
See, when Nick cannot justify it for you guys, you know you've gone too far.
It's hard for me.
This guy specializes in fan justification right here, yeah.
I really thought about it, and I'm sorry, there's nothing I can say, nothing that I can do. Maybe if he had other powers, I would be okay. If he had other powers, I would be okay.
Well, if he had freeze breath, for example, or super breath, because they're kind of the same power, but they're kind of not. But even then, he would have had to explain why the room was covered in ice. Like that's the even bigger problem.
If it was, that's why I thought it was going to be steam or something. Like the bees will start dying, and then he could say something. They all died for no apparent reason, or he uses super speed to clean up the whole room.
Well, through the power of editing, they just edited around that conversation, and we cut to Lana and Clark on Clark's porch. I guess they went back to Clark's house afterward, and he's like taking a stinger out of her arm or something like that. You know, Clark and Lana have a really good conversation here, because he's like, oh, can you believe that Chloe didn't endorse me? And Lana's like, well, actually, Clark, if I were in her position, I would have done the same thing. He's like, what?
Man, Lana has such depth in her character in the first season.
Well, I'm just saying, like, she's a multifaceted character. I mean, she's like, yeah, Clark, I mean, look at it from her perspective. She has to be objective, and, you know, Paul's a very qualified candidate, and this really forces Clark to kind of look at it, you know, from a new perspective, and I really like that.
I wouldn't say forces, is more like, oh, I have to listen to Lana.
That sure was, but good for her here for building up Chloe. And then you know, you mentioned Nell earlier. We see the headlights of a car pull up, and Lana's like, well, that's Nell. That's my ride. Gotta go.
It's like, why couldn't you just drive her home? You obviously drove her to your porch.
Exactly. Exactly. And then referencing Nell, like, being off camera there and not seeing her, it's just like, come on, guys. All that being said about Lana telling Clark, look, you know, look at it from her perspective. Chloe, don't be mad at her, that kind of thing. He apparently doesn't listen, because he goes to investigate Sasha's shed by himself, and he runs into Chloe there. They've gone there independently to investigate it on their own. But then, you know, they do take this opportunity. They have a nice moment, and Clark apologizes for being angry with her and says, look, I've had so much change in my life this past year, and you're the one thing that's constant, and I don't want to change that.
The actual quote is, the only constant has been you. Aww. The reason why I remember that is because I'm going to use that one day.
Yeah, but he's not saying it in a romantic sense.
She takes it kind of romantically, like the way she takes it. She's taken aback a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I read into that scene a little bit too much. I like that scene.
Hey, as we established earlier, I'm a Clark shipper, so of course I like it too. And we're building towards the end of the season here, where we actually get some payoff for that relationship. So to Chloe, kind of techno babbles an explanation here, and it's about, like, well, Schuster Gorge, a reference to Joe Schuster, one of the creators of Superman.
Oh,
it's the quote, deepest crater in Smallville, and that's where Sasha had her bee accident, where she was stung over 1,000 times, and then after that, they thought she was going to die because she had been allergic to bees.
I wonder if they did any type of research about how many times a normal person can get stung and live, because 1,000 seemed like a little bit much.
Well, and in a way, this is actually very similar to second episode, Metamorphosis, with Bug Boy. Because he gets stung by all those kryptonite bugs, and that's how he becomes, you know, Bug Boy. Okay. But the catalyst there all made sense. As far as Freak of the Weeks go, I thought that was a pretty solid explanation. And Chloe even did some internet research and found, like, oh, yeah, there's reports of shaman in the rainforest who take on the traits of insects when they've been stung by too many of them or something like that, right? This was just like, yeah.
Beetle?
Yeah. Oh, this was like, yeah, you know, she was allergic to bees, but she got stung by a lot in a meteor cavern. Why is she hanging out in a crate? All right, moving on.
Yeah, that's the question that I want to know the answer to, is why is she hanging out in a crater?
But
why is there bees living in a crater?
Right, well, and then more important to the climax of this episode, Chloe theorizes is that, you know, she's giving off some kind of scent that queen bees emanate, and that's why all the bees from the state are coming towards her and respond to her beck and call. But if her emotional state changes, her scent will change, and then the bees will turn on her. So that they're setting that up for the end. That's complete speculation, right?
Yeah.
So our next scene is we got to come back to Lex's plot, right? So Lex.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's right. So don't forget, Lex Luthor is in this TV show. Lex meets up with Carrie at the Talon. And this starts off as a really cool, another strong Lex scene, because he has the upper hand on her. Because he's like, yeah, I just wanted to check in on how the article's going. And she's like, oh, yeah, yeah, people are going to see you in a whole new light. And he's like, oh, really? Well, I read the first draft, and he pulls it out. She's like, how did you get that? You know, it's a very, very Lex Luthor, very in control. But the power quickly shifts in this conversation because basically it's an editorial about how he's just a spoiled kid who's in his dad's shadow and all this stuff. And it's kind of character assassination, right? She basically twists everything he had told her. Mm-hmm. He wants her to kill the article. He's like, what'll it take for this article to go the way? And she's like, unlike your whore from the Inquisitor, I'm not for sale, which is a deep cut about Roger Nixon. And then she kind of walks off and she's like, thanks for being my first. And it's like, okay, the more innuendo, what's going on? But then Sasha goes to, she got a note from Clark that he was dropping out of the race because he wanted, mm-hmm. he wanted to lure her to the farm for some reason.
I don't know.
I question his strategy here. This is why Superman's not the best strategist. Leave the strategy to Batman, because if this is his best, he's like, I know, I'll lure her to my house where my family lives, so when she attacks me with the bees, they'll be in danger as well.
See, I would have been a little bit more, if it wasn't in the barn, if it was at least just like in the field, because then you can see the bees coming.
Yeah, like Martha does in a second here. Sasha quickly figures out that the Clark's onto her. She's like, fine, you know what? You're right, but who's going to believe you? Even if they did, who can stop me? And she has this really, really silly, like, concentration face. And it's like, I know that we have to understand as viewers that she's controlling the bees, but it's just, it's so silly looking. It's hard to take seriously.
Okay, I wasn't actually sure what was going on. Like, because there was no sound effects. She was closing her eyes, getting mad. I was like, is this where we realize that her scent changed and she's not able to, control the bees anymore? Because, like, they talked about it literally, like, a couple of scenes ago. So I was just like, this is weird.
Yeah.
In a barn.
I'm sure they really couldn't figure out how to visualize it. They just said, just look like you're concentrating really, really hard.
See, I think it would have been just great if she just started laughing and smiling. And then Clark goes, wait, what are you doing? Where are you sending them? And then that would have been perfect. But I don't know. They had to show some manifest.
Visual cue, I guess. So then Martha's out there on the tractor. She just looked really happy out there on the tractor. You know, she's just driving along. Talking about laughing and smiling. It quickly turns to dread as she sees a swarm of bees coming at her. And we get slow motion Martha. We get Martha in an action scene, which we usually don't get. So Annette O'Toole got to do some slow-mo green screen work here.
My question is, do tractors go slower than you run? I was just curious. Like, she gets off the tractor and runs, and I was just curious.
Well, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. My question was, how fast are bees?
That's true.
You know what I mean?
How fast are bees?
Anyway, tractors, I mean, they probably top out at 30 miles an hour.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah, for a sustained human. And she didn't know Clark was going to come super speed in and save her. Because, man, Clark just, the swarm just about gets to her. And slow-mo Martha looks pretty funny, by the way.
Because she turns around and she, like, mid-trips, like, yeah. In the air. And I was like, oh.
No, her hair's flying around and she's about to fall. So Clark super speeds over. He saves her and he stashes her in the storm cellar. Which, you know, I guess they're getting their money's worth out of that new Storm Cellar set they built a couple episodes true. Back. So that's cool.
Very
that's
true.
Cool. And that's a very logical place to hide her. So that's fine. And then so Clark super speeds over to Sasha's.
She's like, someone broke into the place.
Yeah. She notices that going in, and it's Clark. She's like, wow, you got here fast. Like, just totally, totally giving away your secret here, Clark. I mean, once again, be a little more discreet. I don't know what you need to do, but you can't count on all these people dying or having amnesia. They're going to be like, hey, so this guy has super strength and super speed. You know, there's something with this guy. Their conversation starts escalating, and Chloe was right. The bees start crashing in and trying to attack them.
Now, is this a real thing?
This is not. None of this is real, Nick. It's all
No. What I mean is, do queens, like, sense do change, and then the bees do attack the queen?
Well, I know that, you know, when there's two queens, there's like a they have to fight each other.
I know that. So I know that.
But I don't. Honestly, I don't know. I haven't done enough insect. I think I don't really like insects, so.
I don't either. Which brings us to the next part.
I'm a doctor, not an entomologist. No, I'm not a doctor either. But the. So her scent changes, and the bees start crashing into her shed. Clark does a quick scan of the room here to see what he has at his disposal, and he sees these, I guess, flammable gas canisters, or what, you know, the stuff you use in, like, the electric grill.
Propane or propane accessories.
Propane. This is all staged where they're in a shed where all this would be, right? So there's some propane tanks in the corner. He sees a screwdriver. So he does, like, a big action hero move here. He dives over the screwdriver, picks it up, throws it in slow motion midair. The screw, and, you know, he has super strength, so this is believable, right? That this could happen.
I was just curious. Like, can we Mythbusters this? Can we make sure this actually happens?
Well, I guess you could shoot a screwdriver out of a cannon into some propane and see if they explode. I guess that'd be the only.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was just thinking, like, but, is there a spark being generated that, or is it just this pressure coming out? Okay, we're looking way too much into this. But when that moment happened, it was like, oh. Is this the heat vision moment?
Yes, like, I almost forgot that he didn't have heat vision. Like, oh, yeah, he's just going to use heat vision. Because he does this exact same thing later in season 3. Like, he's about to get found out by some people. He's trapped in a truck. And he uses his heat vision to explode some propane. And that blows up the truck, and he's able to escape. And I thought, oh, heat vision. Oh, wait, he doesn't have that yet. So what's he going to do? I don't know if just piercing a can of propane causes it to explode. I mean, maybe if he got some matches. I don't know. But time was of the essence, and he does his action hero throw, and the screwdriver pierces the propane, and this building blows up real good, does it not?
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I would react if there was not a swarm of bees, but a swarm of spiders. I would kill it with fire, kill it with fire, and that would be my only way that I would do it. That's how it would go.
This garage itself, by the way, it was constructed specifically for this episode, this shed. Like, it wasn't a set they went to or a building they found. They built it just for this episode. Mike Walls, the physical effects supervisor for Smallville, had this to say about the shed and the explosion. Because we knew we were blowing it up at the end of the story, we had built it in such a fashion so that it would come apart nice and easy and make it look really fantastic in the explosion. That explosion is one of my favorites from the whole show. It was nice and huge and did exactly what it was supposed to do. And I agree, it's pretty impressive, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it was a great explosion.
Now, it reminded me of the explosion from Craving, when the greenhouse explodes. Okay. And it made me think, Nick, what do you think about this? Should I add a category of building explosions to the series tally board?
Would this be only number 2?
Yes, it's only number 2, so I'm like, maybe. And I know there may be 2 or 3 more coming, but I'm not really sure.
I think we should wait till we hit 3.
But then it's like, oh, remember, we have to backtrack and add some.
True,
so.
True. You know what? I don't think it's needed. Because
there's so many other explosions.
Yeah, explosions will happen. So.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to run it by you. But, I mean, yeah, the tally board, to be honest, the tally board's getting pretty long. I have to reference it now. I used to be like, okay, they went to the hospital. There's a car accident. Da, 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 da. Now I'm like, okay, what? Now what categories do I have? What numbers are we on? It's hard to keep track of. And the first season's not even over yet. It's hard to keep track of. Anyway, so that resolves that plot. And I feel like, man, there's a lot of time left in this episode. Like, what are they going to do in the next 10 minutes? Right? So we cut to the celebration for Paul. He ended up winning. I guess they held the election and he won. And they're having the party at the Talon.
And Paul wasn't there because they didn't have the budget to have him show up again.
That was not the reason, Nick, okay?
No, he wasn't able to. That's why Chloe was taking pictures. And just for you guys to know, I was just poking fun. I'm not really butthurt about this whole situation. I'm just saying this because it drives it. It drives the meaning to it.
No, I agree, man. Obviously, you have that perspective that I would never have on that, so I appreciate you. That's a whole line of conversation I didn't expect to have this episode, but that's great, man. No, for real.
So in the scene where they're all talking and they're having the conversation about Paul winning, and then Chloe comes up and talks to Clark for a little bit, and it's like, you know, you're showing really good dignity after taking a loss, and that's what really makes a great leader. So that brings a question. Zach, how did you feel when you found out you lost?
Yeah, you know, I don't really, to answer your question, I don't really recall exactly how it went down. Not that I didn't have belief in myself, but I always knew it was kind of a long shot.
Well, think of it this way. You did it because Clark did it, and so you lost because Clark lost.
Well, that's exactly, I'm like, oh, good. Well, of course I lost, because in the back of my mind, I was like, well, Clark lost, so, you know, if I lose, it's just going to be like, hey, guys, my life is like Smallville. But no, I do remember, you know, I know I've been throwing in some shade in this episode, but my opponent, Ravi, since we were already using people's names, I'll go ahead and continue to do so. I mean, he did come up to me. He's like, hey, man, for what it's worth, that I heard it was close. And just a kind of a good game speech after the game and all that, so to speak. I was content. You know, I had a lot going on already senior year. I mean, I was going to be editor of the high school newspaper, something that Clark never did, right? I got Chloe's job, Clark.
Chloe's job.
and I took it in stride. You know, I was like, look, I'm not going to be bitter about this. I'm not going to have a chip on my shoulder. And the next year started, and I I really just gave it my all and gave it 110% either way. Because, you know, you're under a microscope then when you put yourself out there publicly. So it's like, oh, look at Zach. He lost band president, so now he has a bad attitude. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, I feel like,
you know, not that I was expecting this or anything, but I was awarded our two-leader award, which is something we gave out every week in marching band. And I got the first one, which is basically what you get for our summer band. Because for all you non-band nerds out there, when you're in summer band, you have to get there, like, you the last week of July.
you don't understand. It's so hot.
It is brutally hot. It's Texas heat. Okay,
it is the worst. But it was also fun because you're always surrounded by great people and everything like that. And it's a family. But we digress. Zach, all I could say is the way that you handled it was exactly like how Chloe said, like with dignity. And you personified Clark. We're losing, so
well. Thank you, Nick.
Props to you.
I appreciate that, man. I know we joke about, hey, my life is like Smallville, but look, I really do try to, like, you know, live out the ideals of Superman in the show. So I appreciate that. Thanks, Nick. You know, and that's the reason I wanted you on this episode, because you had some perspective. You had some perspective on that.
Then we have our scene, like the really good scene between Lex and Clark, that comes up, where it's like he didn't win. They're talking about how he wasn't destined to be a politician, and they're talking about the future.
Yeah, like, and Clark says, "My father says you learn more about yourself when you lose." And like another Kent nugget of wisdom, right?
Yes, very. That's a great nugget. And look, you learned a lot more about yourself when you lost. But
oh, man, can we move on from the part I lost? Like I said I was over it. Okay.
Well, no, but it brings it in. It's really nice because he talks about, like, yeah, I want to be president one day. But the whole part where he was talking about, in order to be a politician, I can't see myself living two lives. And that's like a really nice, like, subtle way to show another Lex Luthor and a Superman type of deal.
The split identity thing. The whole reference to Lex being president is some pretty dark foreshadowing, because as we've seen on Smallville itself, you know, when Lex does become president, it's bad news.
But he doesn't know that. So it's almost lighthearted, and I go back to why one of the reasons why the show was hard for me to watch in the beginning was that you know what's going to happen toward the end, but then now rewatching it with a better, I guess, head on my shoulders, what you said, to see how everything comes together, though. Like, he literally thinks he's going to be a great president when he grows up. So it's a nice good on you, Mike Rosenbaum.
Well, he's 22. He's grown up, but I see. And then Clark offers to give Lex his slogan back, you know, Man of Tomorrow. And Lex says, no, you can keep it. Yeah. So, which is a nice little Superman dot. Now, they did wrap up the Beanery Talon War here too, didn't they, Nick?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Lana, she went to another reporter friend through Chloe. See, here, we could have had some interaction with Castle. I forgot her first name. Carrie?
Mm-hmm.
Carrie Castle? Like, if they ran into each other and said,
with Nathan Fillion, yes. With
Carrie. Yeah. No. If they really wanted to, like, at least intertwine with Lana's story, maybe she ran into Castle when she was at the Talon. And she could have gave some type of tip. It's like, hey, you should look into the Beanery a little bit more. And that would have been just like one way to tie it.
We do often complain about contrivances like that, but then, like, you understand why they write contrivances, because if we don't, nothing ever connects.
Right.
It's like, what is this? Why are we watching these random scenes that have nothing to do with each other? So yeah, basically, what was it? Lana heard from a vendor that the Beanery was covering up a lot of health code violations, and then Chloe had a reporter friend look into it, and voila, there we go. So I guess this kind of puts the Beanery out of business, because we never hear about it anymore, which is, I'd say it's a little harsh, but they pretty much come to Lana and said, hey, we're going to put you out of business. So I guess that means war, right?
But so the Godfather references. Why? There is still another Godfather reference.
there's one more after this. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, this seems like it should be the last scene in the episode. Things are wrapping up, right? We're having we're at the Talon. That's a pretty standard ending location for a small episode, the Talon, or perhaps Clark's loft, to reflect on the lessons learned and the events that have transpired in this episode. And I'm like, man, there's still some time left. There's probably at least a couple scenes left, and there are two scenes left. Carrie Castle meets Lex at his mansion, and I believe this is the first time we've got the second level of the Luther Library. I think it's like a set extension, so there's like a higher level that Lex is on, so when she walks in, he's above her, which is a cool like kind of power play thing where, look, I'm above you, and then he comes down to her level to talk to her. Yeah, because I don't remember this like hallway being on the side before. I really feel like this was a set extension on Luther Mansion, so don't quote me on that. But I'm pretty sure this was the first appearance of the extended Luther Mansion set.
Is this where Quicksilver runs through and saves everybody?
That's yes. And anyway, that's the X-Men Apocalypse. Did you like X-Men Apocalypse? Yes or no?
Yes or no,
Nick?
No, I didn't.
Okay, there we go. Me neither. Keep it quick. Keep it quick, Silver. Terrible. I'm leaving that in. Anyway, so Carrie and Lex are talking here, and he says, look, you can print your article, or you can kill your article and have a managing editor position at the Metropolis Journal. She's like, I know people at the Journal. I work there. If there was a position opening, I would know about it. And Lex says, we know different people. So, you know, once again, he's in control again, and I like that. I like that Lex is back in control of the situation. And he basically says, what are you going to tell my father when he hears you cancel the story? He had been suspicious that Lionel had been behind this the whole time, right? And she had not confirmed that, or she had been denying it. But this here confirms that Lionel had put her up to this. Mm. So he asked her, so what are you going to tell my father? And she says, I'll say I got an offer I couldn't refuse. I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Why are they talking about the Godfather? They are also not over 40, therefore undercutting the joke they had earlier. Because it's true. We all know, you know, people are parents' age and stuff. They like The Godfather. I think, you know, my parents really loved The Godfather. It was one of their favorite movies, you know. One and two, the good ones, came out in the 70s. Godfather 3 is garbage. Do not talk about unnecessary sequels. Godfather 3, my goodness. But that's a podcast for another day. We are not going to – I refuse to talk about The Godfather as much as they did in this episode. But I don't get it. Like, there's no, like, thematic thing here, right? With the guy, like, if there was something about politics, like, maybe what you want to, if you want to quote it, like, go quote Mr. Smith Goes to Washington or something. I don't know. Like, what's a political movie? They could, Primary Colors. Why? I don't know. But yeah, the Godfather references are just too much. But anyway, Carrie and Lake shake hands, and that plot line is resolved. Once again, another strong character that we are never going to see again. It would have been nice to see her pop up down the road. Nick, I don't even think we hear about the Metropolis Journal ever again, to be honest with you, because they talk about the Daily Planet, and they do bring up the Inquisitor as time goes on, but the Journal? No, I don't think so.
It's exactly what we were saying in the beginning. Like, this storyline didn't really need – they just needed Lex to do something. This was the storyline, and we never hear from it ever again.
Right. And I'm like – see, here's the difference between this and episode like Craving, right, where Lex had his plot line with Dr. Hamilton in that episode. That plot line was the start of something. You know,
right.
Dr. Hamilton was a recurring character, and it tied into the greater mythology as well with the Meteorox and stuff. And that elevated Lex's kind of independent subplot, elevated that episode. Now, this subplot is good, but it goes nowhere. So it's hard to really say, you know, it wasn't building towards anything. So just it is what it is. It was what it was.
Just like the characters in X-Men Apocalypse.
All right. So, no, yes or no. You said no. We're moving on. So we get a final scene. What did I say, Nick? I said episode's either in the Talon or they're in the Clark's Loft. So here's our final scene in Clark's Loft. Yes. Often Clark, Klana scenes as they're called, C-L-A-N-A, to talk about shipping, right? Klana scenes in the loft. Wonder what Whitney thinks about her just hanging out at Clark's Loft late at night, but that's its own category of conversation. Had they not felt the need to pad this episode out a little bit, like with these scenes and the way they structured it, this conversation between Clark and Lana could have easily been had at the Talon party. But the whole reason it is here is because Lana asked Clark to read his acceptance speech. So the whole class, she's like, speech. And that's kind of cute.
So the part where Clark is talking about, like, I'm never going to be able to see my speech. I wrote it all out. And she's like, oh, well, you can read it to me now. Like, she says now in such a cute way that I rewinded it. I was like, did I just hear that wrong?
Nick, I did the exact same thing.
Oh, you did?
He's like, when? Now.
I know.
She sounds kind of like a kitty cat.
I was thrown off because it's like, was she flirting? Like, I don't.
Yeah, yeah. Whenever women use another voice like that, that's usually what that means. But that was cute.
There was a lot of Klonna time in this episode too, where it was just literally them just together. Like,
but it was natural.
It was natural. Forced. It's like two friends.
She wasn't accusing him of secrets and lies. She'll do as the series progresses. He wasn't trying to keep someone from her. Yeah, this was good. And this is why we like this. This whole podcast, right? And this is part of it, the whole nostalgia of it. This is reminding me why I really liked Clark and Lana as a couple in the first, or the potential, right? The idea of them being a couple in the future in the first season, because the relationship was handled very well, you know, in scenes like this, just cute friends. You can totally see the chemistry between them here. And he starts reading his speech, and they do a whole thing where the music kind of comes up, and we kind of pan out, and his voice trails off. So we don't obviously hear his whole speech, so we don't know. But it would have been bad television just to hear him read this read this whole speech, right? And then that's the end of the episode.
I can't believe Felice and Sasha both dropped out and you still lost. Where did I go wrong?
We ran a good campaign, Pete. We had fun, met some new people, and we have enough t-shirts to last a lifetime.
Please tell me that's not for the torch.
It's for Paul. Since he couldn't attend his own victory party himself, he asked me to take pictures for him.
Chloe, you were right to endorse him. He was the more qualified candidate, and I got caught up in the whole popularity rush.
Don't start gloating just because you got one.
Well, my candidate may have won, but my friend lost. I'm really proud of you tonight, Clark.
Why?
Because you're exhibiting dignity in the face of defeat. It's the quality that all great leaders possess.
Drone got a 7.6 out of 10 on IMDb, which, as Lance and I were talking about last week, the IMDb scale is really like from a 6 to a 9.
You know what I mean? Very true. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. It's like, man, like we see these numbers and we see look at the average. You might as well just change the rating scale.
Yeah, so that's, you know, middle low for, I guess, Marvel Season 1, you know, average. And I would agree on that front. Now, Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage, in his review of Drone, he was not a fan. He gave this episode a 2. Out of 5, and basically he says the only reason he didn't give it a 1 was because of Lex. His quote here is, "I love this show, but I hated this episode. Lex continues to be the saving grace of the series, acting in character and motivating to be the heroic villain. He is dead on and a joy to watch." So there you have it from him. So 2 out of 5, which is the same rating he gave last week's episode, Reaper. So that being said, Nick, if you had to grade this episode on the letter scale as we do, what would you give it?
I'm going to give it a solid C+. And this is what I was trying to say from the beginning. I actually enjoyed the episode. I liked the story. I liked the high school story. And I think it's probably because I just enjoyed it because it was relatable. And I still remember that we went down memory lane this episode. So there was a lot of things. But I gave it only a C+ because of the fact there was a useless, I wouldn't say useless, there were the whole Lex storyline that really had nothing to do with it. The Freak of the Week wasn't really a real threat to Clark at all. And it if you took away the superpowers, I would actually watch this episode still because it's legitimately just like a high school drama type of thing.
So this would have been a great episode of Everwood.
I never watched Everwood, so I guess.
That was a good show. That was a good show back in the day. Chris Pratt, man.
Chris Pratt? That's what I was going to say. Chris Pratt was in it, so. No, but that's why I give it a C+, because I agree with Miles Millar. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It's one of those high school episodes that I actually enjoyed, and I guess I'm part of that denomination of people that like that.
Yeah, see, this episode is not very good. Let's not lie about it, right?
Okay. It's not very good. I just like the story. That's the reason why I gave it C+.
Well, I know. And here's my dilemma, right? It's like this episode, much like last week, you know, I had a very personal connection to that one, a platitude, if you will, that I hold with me the rest of my life pretty much from that episode. And this one, it's like I literally ran for band president because Clark ran for class president this episode. So it's like this episode clearly had a big impact on my young life, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, do I give it a C+? Do I give it a C? And I ultimately feel like I liked the messages of last week's episode, Reaper, more than this one. And this one was a lot of fun, yes. But the Freak of the Week was like, man, these Freak of the Weeks are getting bad. Like, I don't know which one's worse. Like, we had the resurrected guy that touches you when you turn to ash, or the girl that can control bees. But then it's like, look, man, this episode inspired you to do something that you wouldn't have ordinarily done. So I'm going to go with C+. See, and then the struggle here is, like, I feel like I give everything, like, it's either an A- or a C+. I've noticed, like, it's like, man, I really love this episode, but it's not perfect A-.
I can tell you that this was definitely not a B episode, though. Yeah. Get it?
Oh!
And that's the show, guys. Have a good night.
Mic drop, right? So C+ is for both of us, then.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Moving on, Nick, our last bit of business would be the Smallville Tally Board. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, my friend, but I don't think I had anything to add to the Smallville Tally Board. No amnesia? Clark didn't lose his powers? No hospital visits? I mean, what about you?
Yeah, because it was funny because I was thinking about where Felice falls out of the car. I thought she was dead. Like, I was like, okay, add that to the tally board. But then it's like, no, she got bit. She got stung like 100 times and she's in a coma. Yeah. And
she might have died after the episode. We don't know that.
Yeah. Well, okay, so do they ever explain what happened to I already forgot her name. Bee Lady. So
Sasha.
Did they ever explain that? Because for one thing is the fact that the whole place exploded and he just jumped on top of her and he took him out. And there was like no – she didn't have any questions about that. So maybe she got stung and she got knocked out because she's allergic. I don't know. So she had no idea, but we don't hear anything from that because she's like, oh, I'm allergic, don't let them kill me. But she obviously did get stung because there's a bunch of bees in that room.
Yeah. Well, I did think about, like, is that a KO to keep Clark secret? But I don't really think so.
I think we don't know what happened to her, so there's nothing we can actually put on.
Well, much like you and I talked about Cool, way back at the beginning of season one, and it's like, well, did he die? Did he not? And you're not really sure.
Yeah.
It turned into Steve. It's ridiculous. And it's like, I'm not going to put like a 1.5 or an asterisk because, like, for every episode, the rest of the podcast, I'd be like, what is that asterisk for? What is that half for? Like, I don't want to go there.
You know what have been really interesting? It's like characters you've never seen ever again with no explanation.
Well, maybe I'll think about that when the season's over. I'll reevaluate the tally board. But yeah, so nothing, no updates to the tally board. But there is one thing we always do on Always On a Smallville. It's the Bechdel test. Now, does this episode pass or fail, Nick? I'm going to ask you first.
I'm actually trying to remember a conversation between the people and...
Yeah, because Sasha talks to Felice before she threatens her, before she attacks her with all the bees, and that would be a conversation just between two girls.
Yeah.
No one else present.
No one else.
That's not about a guy. So well done, Smallville. I mean, hey, that's pretty diverse for a Midwestern town in Kansas, right? We have a class before Clark enters the race, right? We have three people running for class president. Two of them are women. One of those women is a minority, and the other one is an Asian guy. So pretty good diversity for a Kansas town, even though Lance was kind of suspicious about the clientele at the talent in our last episode. And man, I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to seeing all these policies that Paul's gonna enact as the new class president of Smallville in season two and beyond, right?
Yeah, because they definitely refer back to him.
Nope, never see him again. But yeah, oh brother.
Oh. But you know what? I think I might keep my own tally to see how many more Asian people show up in this town. Because probably the only reason why he's at that school is because he's probably going to be in top 1%.
So, Nick, thanks so much for taking the time talking about Drone with me.
No problem.
And if people want to find you on the internet, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter. Is that how you spell it? Twitter? Twitter? It doesn't matter. You can find me at Nick Ryan. That is NickRyan.
Alrighty. And as for me personally, you can find me at Moron Zach on Twitter. That's MoreOnZach. And as for the podcast, you can find us at Always Mallville with 1S on Twitter. That's Always Mallville with 1S. You can also find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com. That's AlwaysMallville@gmail.com. Keep those emails coming, guys. It's been great reading you guys' feedback as we read earlier. So I love the interaction. What about you, Nick?
Oh, I love it. It shows that what we do is actually, like, other people agree or other people disagree, and it makes, like I mentioned before, it makes great conversation.
What a terrible way to phrase that. Did you like the reader feedback? No, I hate it. It's garbage. Don't send us emails. Well, yes, but what I'm trying to say is we both enjoy it. Look, it's very late. You guys obviously have no idea when we record these things, but it's very late. We've had a long weekend. But Nick's a trooper for hanging there with me, so man, I really appreciate it talking about drawing. And that's the main reason I wanted you on this episode, because I know that you had a good perspective on me running for class president.
Are you sure it wasn't the whole agent thing?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay, just making sure.
If it was the Asian thing, I'll have you on the episode where they go to China, okay? But yeah, I mean, this episodes like this, it's funny because this and last week, they are not good episodes, right? But these are the episodes that really shaped my fandom in Smallville and, like, influenced me in life. Like I said, the life lesson about I take the man over the memory any day of the week from last week from Reaper. And this week about, you know, running for class president. Like, these are things that define my youth. You know, these episodes of Smallville, this is the stuff that inspired me to you know, for this to be my favorite show of all time, and why I'm sitting here doing this podcast right now. So it's crazy. You think all the highs, like, of course we get the episodes like, you know, the Christopher Reeve episodes and the Krypton and the Metropolis. All that stuff is great. It's great for Superman mythology. But like you were saying, Nick, every show speaks to people on a different level in a different place in life, right? And it's just these are the episodes that spoke to me in my young life that like influenced me back in the day. And I would say for better or for worse, but I truly think it's all for better. So thank you, Smallville. And for that reason, I will always hold on to Smallville. How's that for a tag, huh, guys? Anyway, we'll be back next week talking about Crush. And until then, always hold on to Smallville. It just takes some time.